Welcome back to Your Calls Media Roundtable. I'm Ethan Elkind, sitting in for Rose Aguilar. And for those of you just joining us now, I want to let you know we're podcasting our show. You can find more information at yourcallradio.org. You can also listen to past shows there and sign up for our newsletter to find out what's coming up next. And if you have a show idea for us, you can drop us a line at yourcall@kalw.org, or you can call us at 866-798-TALK. That's 866-798-8255. And we do want to hear from you for this next segment that we're going to cover on climate disinformation and the campaign against renewable energy. Have you come across disinformation on clean technologies like solar and wind? Do you have ideas on how to combat it? You can join this next conversation by calling us at 866-798-TALK. That's 866-798-8255. You can also send us an email to yourcall@kalw.org. So now we're going to discuss the coordinated campaigns by right-wing organizations, think tanks, and fossil fuel industry representatives to delay meaningful action on the climate crisis. In her most recent investigation for the American Prospect magazine, our guest for this segment, Rebecca Burns, writes, quote, from coastal hamlets in New York to rural farming towns in Ohio, residents supporting wind and solar in their communities are running up against the same barrier, a chorus of disinformation, much of it tied to or even circulated directly by fossil fuel-backed groups waging an existential fight to preserve the status quo. Rebecca Burns is an award-winning investigative reporter whose work has been featured in Bloomberg Green, The Guardian, and The New Republic, as well as the American Republic. Rebecca, good to have you with us on Your Call, and thank you so much for sharing this important story of what's happening with these campaigns against renewable energy.
Thanks for having me.
So, Rebecca, let's just start from the basics here. Can you just describe what you have found in investigating these campaigns? What exactly is going on?
Sure. So for many years, environmental groups, just ordinary folks advocating in favor of bringing wind and solar projects to their communities have kind of run up against these local disinformation campaigns and found sort of public opinion rapidly turning against these types of projects. So, you know, examples might be misinformation about the health impacts of wind turbines or, you know, just as simple as that they're an eyesore. And while some of that is sort of what folks might call NIMBYism, not in my backyard, there's been a suspicion for a long time that it's sort of a larger and more coordinated effort to sort of deliberately sow this kind of disinformation and connect anti-renewable activists across states. So that's what I was kind of trying to trace out here, is why do we see some of the same talking points, some of the same actors showing up in fights over renewable energy, you know, on the East Coast, in Iowa, in Ohio. Who are these folks and who are they funded by?
And Rebecca, how did you dig into this? Where do you even start once you see these common talking points in different areas? How do you start to peel back that onion?
Sure. Well, a lot of this really is hiding in plain sight. So, you know, a lot of listeners, you know, may be familiar with the way that the Koch brothers founded sort of this sprawling network of think tanks dedicated to sowing misinformation about climate change, you know, for several decades back now. And what researchers of misinformation and of climate misinformation have been noting is that increasingly the rhetoric coming out of these types of groups, you know, Koch-funded groups, is less likely to be about denying the reality of climate change and more likely to be about sort of undermining the types of solutions that we need, including the rapid deployment of renewable energy. So once you sort of have that framework in mind, it's not too tough. And a lot of other local journalists, you know, have been doing this work as well. Again, you know, on the East Coast, as well as in more rural areas in, you know, Ohio. In particular, it's not too tough to sort of see that these are the types of groups putting out a lot of the talking points. And then increasingly, these are the types of groups also providing legal representation sometimes even staff helping sort of convene press conferences. Once you sort of see the shift in tactics from outright climate denial to sort of what's called the new climate denialism, you know, again, sowing fear and misinformation about climate solutions, you can sort of see the fingerprints of longtime climate deniers on a lot of these anti-renewable campaigns.
And Rebecca, walk us through how these campaigns work. I mean, if you're one of these operatives, how do you approach this issue? Where are your leverage points? How do you begin operating within a community to start taking on a wind or solar facility?
Sure. So one thing to understand is, all large-scale development projects, renewable energy often depends on, many, many phases of governmental authorizations and permits, including often certain types of permissions from state and local governments. So this is already a long and drawn-out process. Where you need to have, local, state, and federal lawmakers doing certain types of reviews. And in that process, there are also sort of a lot of choke points where you can stall these types of projects until they become significantly less viable economically. So sort of one of the most, in-your-face disinformation campaigns that folks may have run into concerns the Biden administration's push to develop large-scale offshore wind projects along the East Coast. So that's been picking up steam over the last several years. Also in the last several years, we've seen an increasing number of deaths of several different species of whales. Scientists are still investigating the exact causes of those whale deaths. But in many cases, it appears to be a combination of ship strikes, entanglements in fishing gear. These are generally the most common causes of whale mortalities, as well as, very likely effects related to climate change. So one of the sort of largest scale and most successful pieces of disinformation has been to link the incidences of these whales washing ashore, which is also often very upsetting for folks in coastal communities, to saying, this has something to do with the fact that there are boats out there doing surveys for future offshore wind development. So just in recent weeks, for example, there was a southern right whale that died off the coast of Martha's Vineyard. This is a critically endangered species, fewer than 400 of these types of whales left in the world. And if you sort of go and look in local news articles, local Facebook groups, you'll sort of see people trying to make this link that the reason for this whale's death was offshore wind. So that's really sort of also poisoning public opinion against these types of projects. You also have people sort of organizing in city councils. There's a lot of overlap with, what we saw during the pandemic of people spreading misinformation online about sort of masks and vaccines, but essentially sort of poisoning the well such that these projects, face lawsuits, face opposition when they come up for local votes, lobbying of state legislators to try and turn them against the projects. And it's not as though it's completely ground them to a halt, but, delay is one of the, delay in effect is success when you're sort of a climate denier. The longer you can sort of delay the needed solutions, the less likely we are to actually get to the point of, taking the action we need to see.
Well, and the delay can cost the developers money, which sometimes is enough to sink a project. And it sounds like they're taking advantage of our relatively decentralized governance structure in the U.S. with these multiple layers of approval, multiple opportunities for lawsuits against these kind of projects. And we know that these projects already are controversial for many people who maybe don't want to see wind turbines on their coastal view or live next to a solar facility. Famously, there was the Cape Wind offshore wind project that very wealthy members of lived in Martha's Vineyard helped to stop. So how much sense do you have that this disinformation campaign is really adding a lot of fuel to that already existing fire of opposition that we see at the local level to so many of these projects?
Right. So this is what, you know, researchers, particularly in the last few years, have been trying to understand, is just how big of an obstacle does this type of opposition represent to the energy transition? And, you know, increasingly it is a significant obstacle. So you can look at the work of Columbia University's Savin Center tracks both cancellations of renewable projects and then actual ordinances and state laws that are blocking any kind of renewable energy development or restricting energy development. And there are now hundreds of these types of ordinances. So Ohio is a good example here. This is a state that's in the midst of an energy scandal where the former Speaker of the House was convicted of accepting bribes to push through a bailout of coal and nuclear energy. And you have sort of some of the same political players have been involved in successfully passing legislation that allows individual counties to sort of declare themselves off limits to renewable energy. Now, of course, there are already certain, you know, logistical challenges where only some types of sites are suitable for renewable energy. So when you have whole areas sort of saying, you know, no, you can't have, you can't put any turbines, you can't put any solar facilities, but of course, you know, sort of fossil fuel infrastructure can continue getting built. That really has the potential for a much larger effect, not just for that county or for that state, but for meeting, you know, overall climate goals in the U.S.
So if you're just joining us, this is Ethan Elkind. I'm sitting in for Rose Aguilar, hosting Your Calls Media Roundtable, and we're joined by Rebecca Burns, who has written an important account of the right-wing and fossil fuel-backed campaign against climate technologies like renewable energy facilities, solar and wind. She's written an important story on that for the American Prospect and Sierra Club magazine. And we also want to hear from you too. Are you concerned about this community pushback to renewable energy? Do you have ideas for what can be done to address it? We'd love to hear from you. You can email us at yourcall@kalw.org, or you can call us at 866-798-TALK. That's 866-798-8255. Rebecca, I wanted to ask you about the people involved. Who are some of the key players? Because your article, your reporting on this has surfaced some pretty interesting characters who have been extremely impactful, but not necessarily with the credibility that you would hope. So can you describe who some of these folks are?
Right. So again, I think there's a lot of overlap between you know, sort of well-known climate deniers, you know, the folks who run a website called Climate Depot that has long been involved in attacking climate scientists, you know, spreading, you know, what was for a long time a prominent myth that the Earth was actually cooling, not warming. They've sort of made the transition into, you know, leading or at least sort of spitting out these types of talking points. And what's, you know, both interesting but troubling is that they've had a lot of success doing this by sort of rebranding themselves as environmentalists, effectively, you know, who are the ones sounding the alarm about impacts on wildlife. So I think Mark Morano is one good example. You know, this is someone who's sort of famous for attacking Bill Nye, you know, was formerly on staff for Jim Inhofe, was featured in the documentary Merchants of Doubt, you know, about campaigns to undermine science. He now is sort of someone who's staging, you know, these highly choreographed protests, sort of pretending to try and convince construction workers to, you know, cease offshore wind construction in the name of saving whales. You know, you have the Heritage Foundation, another infamous climate denial group, you know, filing suit using the Endangered Species Act, you know, to try and stop offshore wind construction again, purportedly to protect endangered whales. So I think this is pretty nakedly cynical, but at the same time, you know, if you're not necessarily following these folks, or if you're skeptical of, you know, climate science, or have been sort of subjected to sort of denial talking points for a long time, they're really able to find audiences for these types of arguments, you know, about offshore wind, about the Biden administration, about renewable energy developers being sort of the real villains here, and turning it into a David and Goliath story, where sort of David is, you know, fossil fuel operatives effectively, which is bizarre, but it in some cases is proving effective.
And as you write, this individual Mark Morano is not really doing it all by himself. His disinformation campaign has a lot of funding and support. Can you talk about some of the network and the funding behind Morano specifically?
Right. So again, you know, this is really coming out of the sort of climate denial machine assembled, you know, with funding from groups like Exxon, from the Charles Koch Foundation, from dark money groups, you know, linked to Leonard Leo, conservative operative, those groups are the ones that have really sort of made this transition into, you know, becoming spokes at the center of this anti-renewable network.
And Rebecca, I wanted to ask also just about another individual here involved in this. I mean, you mentioned Mark Morano here, but there's also this retired real estate investor, John Draws. Can you talk about his involvement?
Sure. So John Draws is interesting, and I think is someone who sort of illustrates how much has been achieved just by sort of networking within this kind of anti-renewable energy network. So a little more than a decade ago, John Draws, who again, retired real estate investor, you know, worked at some point for General Electric, sort of cast himself as an independent physicist. He helped convene a meeting more than a decade ago in Washington, D.C. that kind of brought together, you know, we might call them grassroots anti-wind activists. So largely people from more affluent communities, you know, who didn't want to see wind turbines in their homes in, you know, places in upstate New York, brought them together with representatives from right-wing think tanks like the American Legislative Exchange Council, and sort of started planting the seed of how these types of groups could work together. And, you know, this has been documented a number of times that we see these types of connections, again, between these sort of you know, self-styled wind warriors who may have connections in their own communities, the network linking them with sort of more traditional right-wing and fossil fuel operatives that have, you know, policy connections, that have deep pockets, that have legal representation. Collaboration between those actors, sort of, we see that again and again in local wind fights. And John Draws in particular sort of has operated a little bit like the American Legislative Exchange Council does at the state level. He's operated a bit like that at the local level, where he has a website that makes available sort of model ordinances that localities can adopt if they want to try to block wind development. He's sort of facilitated, you know, connections between people who want to fight, you know, wind projects proposed in their communities, connected them with sort of, you know, policy advice. That was sort of the seed of this, it seems. And from there has just sort of grown astronomically, especially in recent years, sort of with the help of social media and with, you know, renewable energy really almost becoming more of a culture war issue where, you know, if you go in Facebook groups dedicated to opposing renewable energy, you know, you'll often also find content about, you know, masking, vaccines. So this has sort of become, you know, almost a stew of these sort of different ideologies mixing together that can manifest in some pretty nasty ways at community level fights.
We're talking to Rebecca Burns, award-winning investigative reporter who has covered extensively the right-wing fossil fuel-backed campaign against renewable energy around the country. This is Ethan Elkind sitting in for Rose Aguilar on Your Calls Media Roundtable. Would love to hear from our listeners as well. If you'd like to call and join this conversation, you could do so at 866-798-TALK. That's 866-798-8255. As we're talking about disinformation, wondering if any of you listeners have come across this disinformation, have thoughts about what to do about it, or have battled yourself or been involved in any of these fights around local renewable energy deployment. So, Rebecca, I wanted to ask you about the nature of these campaigns, because we're seeing it not just against renewable energy, but at the state level, we're seeing campaigns against efforts to phase out natural gas in homes and buildings, for example, which also seems to have a bit of this grassroots kind of an effort. Is there a play on the part of this right-wing campaign to coordinate and learn from these other types of anti-climate technology campaigns that are going on, this movement against all-electric buildings, all-electric appliances, for example? How widespread is this web being woven here?
Yeah, well, I think we can certainly see, again, the success of sort of trying to turn things like, you know, wind turbines as well as gas stoves into this culture war issue where, you know, you do both have sort of the traditional behind-the-scenes lobbying, trying to win over legislators with campaign contributions, but then, you know, talking points sort of spreading like wildfire through social media and kind of at some point almost taking on a life of their own. So I think, you know, at that point, this thing kind of once it's out there, it's sort of difficult to put the genie back in the bottle. So I think, unfortunately, this is, you know, a playbook that can be successful. The other thing is, you know, in my piece, I talked about, and I'm sort of not certainly the first one to make this comparison, the book, and then it later became a documentary, Merchants of Doubt, you know, talked about how the fossil fuel industry sort of took a page from the tobacco industry, you know, and a number of other industries that have sort of tried to delay regulation by spreading misinformation and particularly by making it appear as though, you know, the science wasn't settled or, you know, the strategy that they referred to was to try and keep the controversy alive, you know, sort of seed so many alternative facts that it's unclear to the average person, you know, what actually, the state of understanding and inquiry is, and thereby sort of try and fend off regulation long enough to continue turning a profit for a few more years. So, you know, that really is the crux of what we're seeing here, even to the extent that some of the same people have kind of made the transition from, you know, working for the tobacco industry to fossil fuel and now sort of attacking the efficacy of renewable energy. And, you know, unfortunately, we've seen this be successful for a long time. So the real question now is sort of how do you get out in front of it, you know, address where there sometimes are real issues with, you know, how developers are engaging communities with planned renewable energy projects. You know, there are real questions about how to make sure you know, wildlife and human health is protected. But those aren't the types of questions being engaged when there are these sort of opposition campaigns. So I think, you know, the task for environmental advocates, you know, for developers acting in good faith here is to have this sort of engagement upfront in communities with planned projects, you know, hear people out and really try and get ahead of this kind of misinformation that is now almost a given whenever wind and solar projects are proposed.
Yeah, Rebecca, I'm glad you mentioned this because, of course, we do have a counter industry potentially against this campaign against renewable energy, which is, of course, the renewable energy industry itself. Plus, maybe some larger utilities might have an interest in making money off of these projects. So I'm curious what you're seeing in terms of the sort of counter industry movement against what we're seeing on the disinformation, as well as some additional options and paths forward that you just referenced for what could be done to try to address some of the legitimate concerns around these facilities.
Right. I mean, well, I think it's important to acknowledge, like, these are, especially where offshore wind is concerned, these are generally enormous for-profit developers. Often some of the partners in projects are sort of like subsidiaries of fossil fuel companies. So, you know, a division of BP is involved in some offshore wind. So it's not that they're always, you know, engaging with, you know, the best interests of communities and environment in mind. The point is that at the moment in sort of the landscape in the United States, that's who has the resources to do this project. And, you know, of course, they do need to be held to account in, you know, engaging appropriately and taking real concerns into account in planning and executing projects, you know, and being regulated appropriately. You know, when I talked to folks in communities that were, you know, had sort of been targeted with this kind of disinformation campaign, and we're sort of trying to reel that back in, you know, to advocate for renewable energy. Generally, what they said is, you know, the developer started way too late engaging with the community, you know, sort of didn't take seriously when people just had actual, real, good faith questions, you know, and now reeling that back in is much harder than sort of having real community engagement from
absolutely. No, it's got to be smart from the start, as they say. Well, Rebecca Burns, I just want to thank you for coming on Your Calls Media Roundtable, award-winning investigative reporter covering climate disinformation campaigns. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me.
To listen to past shows or sign up for our podcast, you can visit yourcallradio.org. You can also find us on iTunes. And we're on X at Your Call Radio. You can email show ideas and feedback to yourcall@kalw.org. Lihei Raz is on produced today's show. Kevin Vance is our studio engineer. Thanks so much for joining us. I'm Ethan Elkind, sitting in for Rose Aguilar. It's Your Call.